Okay, welcome. Thanks for coming to this talk. We are getting a little bit closer to the hardware in this talk compared to what we've seen so far. And we're talking about Wolf Boot, resilient quantum resistant secure boot for all architectures. I'm Daniele Lacamera from Wolf SSL. Wolf SSL is a company that develops and maintains a number of software products, the main one being Wolf SSL itself, which is a lightweight TLS and crypto implementation for mostly oriented to embedded devices. We are 20 times smaller than OpenSSL, so we can scale down to microcontrollers and small embedded systems. We scale much better. We are often ahead on specifications. We were ahead on the TLS 1.3, for instance, lately. We support all operating systems, more or less, that we know of. And we have certifications for FIPS 140-3. And we claim to be the best tested crypto. And we invite you to challenge us on this. And we are, all the things that we do are dual licensed. Some are GPL3, some are GPL2, 2+. And we offer commercial license for those folks that cannot use the GPL version, which is most of our customers. And this allows us to maintain our products with a professional team of developers. And of course, besides Wolf SSL and TLS, we have three main focus points. We focus on data, on securing data at rest through cryptography. So we have our crypto engine used as a standalone project. It's called WolfCrypt. We secure data in transit with Wolf SSL and also with SSH. Wolf SSH. We have a Wolf MQTT client. We have a number of products, but I'm here today to talk about secure boot and firmware updates. So that's a third area there. And of course, if you're here, you probably know what secure boot is and what its goal. And so the goal is basically to prevent anyone to load a firmware that's not authorized on your, in this case, embedded system. So that's where we focus on today. So we're not talking about generic computers, as the previous speaker. But you have to know this project is started in 2018. Our first target was a Cortex M. So very small microcontrollers. In this case, we wanted to implement firmware updates over the air because many of our customers and users were already doing this themselves using our WolfCrypt engine. So basically, they were all the time reinventing the same wheel. So we decided to give this wheel a shape. And since we don't do anything, we don't invent anything. We are a company that's based only on specifications that come from standards. The first thing we did is looking for a standard. And there was none at the time. But there was this group within the ATF that was working on a draft that was called SUIT at the time. It's a software update for the Internet of Things. Later renamed to something else. But still, this document became an informational RFC, I think, in 2021. It's called RFC 1919. So you understand this was initially just an IoT product, right? So for this reason, I made a talk at the beginning. After a couple of years, the project started here at FOSDEM, but it was in the IoT dev room. So you can see that we grew a little bit past that, and we started porting to different architectures. We started with RISC-V 32-bit. We also added the Renesas RX architecture, which is proprietary architecture. And then during the years, we also ported to actual application CPUs. We did a port on WEFI, which is mostly, let's say, a demonstration for us because WEFI is a very complex chain. It's too complex to fit in embedded Linux systems for us, and especially in those scenarios where safety is also important, not just security. But then we scaled up. We ported to PowerPC, we ported to Oryx Tricore, that's very popular target in automotive, and also on the Cortex-A family, so that's why you see ARM twice there. Nowadays, we support all these architectures. we have 35 plus targets, probably more. Most of the time you can do that and see if you know what you're doing. And one specific thing I'll talk about a bit more is a protection against glitch attacks and fault injection. Because after a while we started this project, this company, NewAE, that makes this fantastic device, the ship shouter, I don't know if you know this one. Basically, you can inject electromagnetic fault injections, and then you can make your secure bootloader skip a specific instruction. And that's a common attack on if you can afford one of these, on secure bootloader, especially on IoT devices. So that was a major concern for us. So we went through, a phase where we managed to add some architecture-specific mitigations, because most of those are in volatile assembly, because we need to trick the compiler not to discard our redundant checks there. So your adversary there is the compiler itself. And we managed, so the mitigations were verified by the folks that reported this in the first place. We do have certified security because our crypto engine has a FIPS 140-3 cryptographic certification, and we also have several safety certification, in particular DL178C, that's for airborne devices, so all embedded devices that are on board on airplanes need to respect this, and it's a very strict requirement on safety. We have flexibility. We do distribute with Wolfboot also these portable key tools that allow you to sign and create keys and manage the keys and sign the firmware. We support multiple partitions, multiple keys. We do have encryption even end-to-end from the sign to the verify. There is an encryption that's optional through AES or ChaCha. And we can support offloading sign into HSL. We'll see this later because it becomes relevant in the post-quantum features. The RFC 1919 is informational, but it indicates that the bootloader needs to be very small because large parsers apparently are an important attack surface. It needs to use a manifest header for metadata. That's what we use to carry the signature and the SHA digest to authenticate and verify the integrity of the image. The authentication should be based on a trust anchor. That's also a term that's defined by RFCs. We go a little bit further into that. We do hash-based integrity verifications, and the update transfers are not managed directly by the bootloader, but they need to be managed by the application. The bootloader finds the image there and verifies it, and this, of course, prevents the bootloader to have to carry something like a TCP/IP stack or any radio drivers that are a significant amount of attack surface that you add to a very critical part that's your first stage bootloader in most cases. So the key pair, you generate it once, you keep it yourself. In most cases, of course, you can use RAC HSM or even HSM as a service in combination with our key tools. So you can have a cloud-based HSM which manages your signing part process, and we split the process so that this is possible. The sign tool does just attach this manifest header to the image, and the manifest header, of course, contains the signature to verify the authenticity of the image. And since the firmware version is also part of the signed payload, it's impossible for an attacker to try and fall back to a previous version, knowing, for instance, a vulnerability in your previous version. So that's how it works. There is a trusted firmware manufacturer. He adds a private key. RFC 1919 mandates that you have a public key on the embedded system somewhere, and then you verify your firmware before starting. The trust anchor basically is a public key that cannot be changed, altered by an attacker. So it needs to be stored somewhere where it's impossible for an attacker to modify it. And there's several ways to do this. The common way we use is if your bootloader is already in a partition that's not modifiable, for instance, it's just programmed once, you can embed the key store in the bootloader itself. Otherwise, you can use a neighbor embedded system, a write protected flash, OTP. We do have OTP drivers, for instance, for a STM32. You can use an HSM or a secure vault in the surrounding, so in the machine itself, and even the TPM. We we support interaction with the TPM. Of course, you know, in a microcontroller, you're supposed to execute in place. So what we do is a swapping mechanism that involves a swap partition. More details about this also in the previous talk, because this mechanism is still the same. So if you check the archive for the 2020 talk, you'll see that more in details. On CPU-based system, we added an AB election at boot. So basically, a bootloader chooses between images that can be verified and choose the last one. And there is, of course, a mechanism if you want to confirm that firmware version. And we integrate with the TPM in several ways. TPM 2.0, we do measure boot to PCR extend, similar to what was presented earlier. We also support parameter encryption on the TPM, so no one can wipe up your TPM while the bootloader is communicating with it. Some features we added recently: we can do trust zone management on Cortex-M devices. So it's a full replacement for TFM that removes a lot of bloating from it. And that's specifically useful in those use cases where you need to reduce the complexity, to reduce the attack surface for the reasons I already said. But you still want to use the trust zone M to separate secure and secure area. In this case, WolfBoot is not just a bootloader, but it adds the WolfCrypt functionalities in the secure part that can be accessed through a PKCS11 interface from the non-secure application. One very big port that we did was the x86 port specifically on the 11th generation Intel Core i7. Of course, this is not for generic PCs. You understand this is a very advanced embedded device. It's usually used with the media or something like this. So the green part there is secured by the Intel-provided Intel boot guard. And then you have two stages of WOF boot. The first one verifies the second, and then the second stage verifies the kernel image. The important thing to note here is that Intel provides something that's called FSP, firmware support package, and a demonstrator bootloader that's called Slim Boot, which is probably 10 times in size of what WOF boot looks like here and in the same setup. So Intel is starting to suggest safety-oriented customers to adopt WOF boot in those scenarios, for instance, in aerospace or in medical devices. And now we talk about post-quantum secure boot, because this is very important. We started developing post-quantum solutions in WOF SSL very long ago, but we started to introduce our own specific implementation for embedded devices, and WOF boot, of course, was one of the early adopters of this. And the first thing we added was hash-based signatures, so LMS, HSS, or XMSS. And then after a while, we switched to our native implementation. Before, we were using the PQC-lib with the reference implementation. And then we added recently, towards Q3 last year, MLDSA and hybrid solutions that are very important to protect secure boot against both types of attacks. So attacks on classic cryptography and post-quantum. We'll see that in a minute. So what's quickly the status of standardizations of these algorithms? Because of course, at some point, we need to choose those algorithms. We already support classic algorithms, all of them, RSA, ECC, ED25519, ED448. But of course, we had to add some more of those. And we had to understand which ones, right? So already in 2016, NIST started, let's say, a contest for including these quantum-safe algorithms. And of course, the thing we care about the most is public key verification, right? So we had to choose algorithms in that area. These excluded some of the algorithms because they were stateful. Stateful means that every time you generate a signature, you need to keep the state. And this otherwise introduced a very catastrophic type of vulnerability. So for this reason, these algorithms, as they are standardized by IETF in these RFCs, mandate that this is the classic scenario from before, and that works also with MLDSA, as we will see. But with the stateful algorithms like LMS, XMSS, you can't manage your key yourself. So you need a separate HSM that keeps the state every time you sign a new key. And we, of course, support this because we can offload that to a third-party signer. And the verification is, in fact, the same. But the actual algorithms that NIST approved were these so far. What's important for us, we just disregard the first and the third, and we check the MLDSA because this is a replacement for RSA and ECC in signatures, and it's based on the Lithium. And important also that NSA is mandating to start migration to post-quantum cryptography secure boot starting from this year. And this will be completely replacing the classic algorithms in a few years. And this document was already released in September 2022. So this is basically the timeline. As you see, the yellow line is what concerns us. And it's actually starting now at the beginning of this year. So people should be already switching to post-quantum for new secure boot devices. What's happening in Europe is slightly different. It's kind of slower. This document was released in April last year and started a task force that needs to, let's say, decide which algorithms will be standardized for use in the European Union. And this document from the European Commission actually defines a should define a roadmap by April 2026. But there is no yet mention of algorithms. On the other hand, Germany, France, and the Netherlands are leading the effort and they're working on a common document where they are looking to standardizing the same algorithm as NIST with the addition probably of something, but with no, let's say, deprecation of any algorithms that have been proposed so far. So the addition would be FrodoChem that's been proposed by the Germans. But we'll have just to wait to see what happens over here. We're lagging behind of a few years now, I think about six. What are the concerns, actually? So there is data harvesting, you probably know, long-lived device. And the migration path cannot be that easy. There is one thing to keep in mind, that these new implementations and designs that are being standardized are kind of new. So they don't have the same maturity as classic algorithms. And you could say ECC has no known attackers nowadays as we know it. So why should we replace it? So the actual strategy should be a hybrid. And that's what we introduced last. So we can do hybrid signature schemes. So it has two signatures. One is a classic, like for instance, ECC, and the other one is post-quantum. And both signatures need to be verified. And this, of course, natively supported by Wolfboot. So instead of having one private key, you get two private key. One is classic ECC, the other one is PQC. Of course, the classic can be RSA or anything else. And we have a best-in-class solution that's MLDSA 87 plus ECDSA 521, which is in line with the current recommendation from NIST and CNSA. And that's what our customers have been advised to adopt for especially long-lived device. So we keep working on post-quantum algorithms and, of course, you will see more of this coming soon, but this concludes my presentation, so I'll take some questions now.
One or two questions.
No one has questions? Oh, yeah, thank you.
What happens if I have both a cell as bootloader and my flash plug firmware? Does the port disconnect now?
Sorry. What happens if you have Wolfboot as bootloader and you flash a firmware over it?
Yeah, I flash a firmware which is not correctly signed. What happens to the port?
Oh, all right, okay. We normally have two partitions there, right, even in microcontrollers. So yeah. if you send an update that's not valid, yeah, that simply gets discarded and you keep putting the same one. Okay. Even if the firmware is valid but it has a bug, so you stage it and at some point it's been signed, but one of your engineers has put a bug in there, so the device is not reachable anymore. We have a mechanism where we call a success function that sets a flag in the flash and says, this is good. So I just did it, actually, replace MCU boot with Wolfboot on my watch. So, and there is a success button that says, okay, I can see the time and, yeah.
Sorry,
Fail safe. Thank you.